Well, it's the time for Dr. Hovind to check in with us for his hour-and-a-half program, but the hurricane has visited Pensacola since we last heard from him, and it's quite possible that their phone lines are down. Now, let's see, what shall we do? There's no immediate solution to this problem that will, I guess, yes, there is. Let's ask you to give me a moment to bring in a program from the past, and we'll stand by and hope we'll hear from Dr. Hovind so that we can bring you something more current, but no promises today, because the fact that we haven't heard from them is not necessarily bad news, but it doesn't mean they haven't tried to communicate with us either. So that's life. We'll close down now, and you'll hear nothing but nothing. Just hear silence until I get the programming up for you.
We are not arrogant.
Interesting. The Bart Man, I did not know that that's true. I guess nor do I know that it's true now, but I'm assuming you're correct. The black and white film has sharper images. Anybody out there can verify that or deny that? I'd like to hear about it, because that's the first I'd heard of that. I mean, by just common intuition, it would sound right, which... Of course, you always got to be careful of prove anything's right. I know hawks and owls and some of these animals just have unreal eyesight. You know, they can read the newspaper at the other end of the football field. Yeah, if they could read and, you know, and care what's going on in the world. Okay, don't know. Okay, Fish OC16, right. My friend had a question on how the books of the Bible were chosen. She also wanted to know why there were not any others added. Thank you. This question, Fish, is called the canonicity or canonicity of the Scriptures. Why these 66 books? Why not 72 like the Catholic Bible has? Which books should be included and why and all that stuff? That is a really long, convoluted discussion you can get into with people who know more about it than I do. In the theology course that I took 30-some years ago, we spent a long time discussing all that. I was, at the time, very satisfied with what I had read and heard and said, wow, this is legitimate and correct. But I don't remember all
that. Well, good intentions don't carry out the act. I have the wrong thing playing for you here. Now let's try again. Maybe this one will be better.
God made the world in 6 days, just like he said he did 6,000 years ago. Kind of funny, wasn't it?
Michael Shermer and his cronies over there at Skeptic Magazine, we're no longer going to be skeptics. We're going to be bright. Of course, they have the convenience and luxury of naming themselves the brights. Nobody else gets to say, hey, you guys are bright. It's them calling themselves bright.
That was good in the debate I had with him, you know. The bright. Yeah, anybody believes they came from a rock, they're pretty bright, all right.
And what did you say, Kent was Welsh for bright?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's where my name Kent comes from.
That couldn't have worked out more perfectly, I don't think.
Well, I don't know if I'm real bright, but my name means bright, and I'm sure smart enough to figure out God must have made this world. I don't think you need to be real sharp to figure that part out. Okay. Anyway, here's one from Jason Brightwell, who says, I work at a boarding school in Woodstock, Virginia. I let one of the students borrow DVD number 4, Lies in the Textbooks. He enjoyed it, and though about how much his education is worth. I don't understand your sentence here, Jason. He specifically mentioned the geologic column and how the textbook said that the fossils date the rocks and vice versa, but never really thought about it, that it was circular reasoning. Keep up the good work, Jason, in Woodstock, Virginia. If it's not worth fighting for, is it worth it at all? Amen. Well, thank you, Jason, and tell them to feel free to call into my radio program. If they want to have any questions or if they do believe in the geologic column, we'd love to talk to them about that. I was in a debate, Jonathan, one time, and this guy said, the geologic column has been discovered in 26 different places around the world. I said, no, you're confused. The index fossils have been discovered in a particular order in 26 places around the world. That's not discovering the geologic column. That is discovering the index fossils. Why aren't they discovered in every place in the world that way?
It's a big world. I mean, you would expect it in, I guess, more places than just 26.
And they got 40 different excuses for why they're not in order. You know, overthrusting, erosion, insertions, you know, faulting.
They got all these buffet of excuses, yeah.
Sure. And they can always pick one out of it. And if that doesn't work, pick another one.
Or just make a new one.
Right. But they never consider the thought that possibly they're not found in order because the whole geologic column is baloney. Doesn't exist. They're making it all up. They're lying. They just don't get it, do they, Jonathan? We got job security for life. Okay. Genesis display okayed for Tulsa Zoo. Article by Pam Shepard today. Let's see. And now the opposition begins. Yep. I'll have to admit with that. Here's a picture of the article, proposed Genesis exhibit for the Tulsa Zoo, that is causing such an uproar in this Bible Belt area. The plaque will contain the Genesis account of creation and will be accompanied by 6 pictures that align with the 6 days of creation from internationally acclaimed photographer and author Rick Ehrenbreit, who also has work on display at the Smithsonian Institution. After 2 hours of debate last month, I'm reading the article here, which drew a standing room only crowd of several hundred people as well as headlines around America, the Tulsa Zoo, which is in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Park and Recreation Board voted 3-1 last month to approve a Genesis account of creation exhibit for display at the municipal Tulsa Zoo. Buoyed by the support of many petition signers, as well as the backing of the Tulsa mayor, who also serves as a board member, AIG friend and a local architect, Dan Hicks, was successful in convincing the board to include a creationist display at the Tulsa Zoo. After the June 7th meeting with the city's 4-member park board, including Tulsa Mayor Bill LaFortune, Hicks urged the board to embrace the Genesis exhibit, pointing out an April 2000 Tulsa World newspaper poll in which 60% of respondents statewide said they believe creation alone explains the origin of mankind. If the zoo is going to open a discussion about origins, why is it only the naturalistic view allowed? Why is the only the naturalistic view allowed while the creationist view held by the majority of Tulsa taxpayers is forbidden, said Hicks. As predicted, protesters came out kicking and screaming. A newly formed alliance consisting of the Tulsa Interfaith Alliance, the Tulsa Metropolitan Ministers, and the Jewish Federation started a petition drive, calling themselves the Friends of Religion and Science. This group is calling on the mayor and the Park and Recreation Board to, number one, reaffirm the zoo's commitment to science education. Let me stop there and insert Hovind thoughts here. Christians have never been against science that I know of. I'm against lying to the students. I'm against including evolution as part of science because it's not. Evolution's a religion.
Without the Christian worldview, science would not. I mean, we wouldn't have it. You have to assume that this is going to be an orderly and predictable creation because we have an orderly and, just God is going to do things very orderly.
Yeah, you got to count on gravity being the same, inertia being the same. I mean, you know, the law has changed. How could you have any science at all?
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, already, if you're going to want to have science, then you have to, you know, presuppose the Christian worldview.
Anyway, so these people against this display are saying, we want to reaffirm the zoo's commitment to science education. Okay, that'd be good. I'm for that. I think the zoo should be in favor of science, okay? Number two, reverse the decision of June 7th. No, I disagree with that. The decision's fine. The majority of people believe in creation, and there's nothing wrong. It is the logical scientific answer to a perplexing problem of how did we get here. Number three, they want the zoo to direct the zoo staff to undertake a review of all exhibit material to ensure that it is consistent with the principles outlined in their letter of petition. Oh, so they want all the displays to match their petition. In other words, don't teach creation. According to the group's website, 1,500 petition signers have already been collected that they wish to represent as present at the next board meeting, yet to be determined. This is yet another reminder of the boisterous group that claims to be about tolerance and inclusion, trying to censor, exclude, and forbid the free speech of creationists. Article goes on and on. Dan Hicks, by the way, Jonathan, is the same guy. He's been a friend of mine for years. Dan Hicks is the one who asked them why they had the outdated display about the horse evolution at the Tulsa Zoo.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. He went and said, hey, this horse evolution display you have here has been proven wrong since 1950. I suggest we have it removed. Why is this still in here? And the zoo director told him, I think his name was, I don't remember his name. I got all the letters on it in my file. The zoo director said, well, we don't have the money to remove the display. That was his response. So Dan went down to a sign shop and got a bid. I've got a copy of it here for 60 or 70 bucks or something like that. The bid says, we will remove the display as soon as funding is available. But something like, this display is not accurate, but we will remove it as soon as funding is available. So Dan took the bid down to the zoo director and said, hey, for 70 bucks, we can get this sign that says, you know, we're going to take this display down as soon as we can afford to. I'll pay for the sign. Here's 70 bucks. And they said, oh, we got to take this before the board. The board got bored with it because nothing happened. So finally, Dan got 2,000 people to sign a petition saying, look, take down this horse evolution display. And it made the evening news. It was a real big deal. Finally, they took down the display. 6 months later, they put it back up. Somebody at the Tulsa Zoo, they need to get somebody to direct that zoo and to work in that zoo that has a brain that stays up with the facts of modern science. Evolution isn't science. Okay, who's on the phone, Jerry?
I believe his name is it Daniel?
Yes. Yes, Daniel. How can we help you?
Hello, Dr. Hovan.
Yes,
this is Daniel Goyley. Called a couple of times. And I have a bunch of questions just on array of subjects and things like that. And the first question I want to ask, is there like a maximum amount of questions you can ask or that you prefer?
Mostly a maximum amount of time, so go quick. We're fast here.
Okay. A couple of things I have a question. Do you believe that suicide basically condemns a person to hell?
No.
No? All right. Why is that?
Well, having or not having Jesus Christ is all that takes you to heaven or hell. I think a person can be saved and commit suicide, which would be self-murder, and still go to heaven. A lot of murderers are saved and going to heaven.
What
I mean, Moses was a murderer. Samson was a murderer. King
Samson
David
killed himself.
And killed himself, yeah.
What about, like, any idea why God changed his name for any particular reason?
I didn't hear that.
Any reason why God changes people's names? Right.
Well, usually names in the Bible, and today I suppose names have meaning. You know,
mm-hmm.
They mean something. In many cultures, it's extremely important what you name the kid, because that name portrays a meaning from then on. And all the Bible names certainly have meanings. Jesus means Jehovah saves, or Joshua is the New Testament, Old Testament equivalent, Jehovah saves. Many of the names in the Bible, like Beth-El, El means God, and Beth means house. So Bethel, or the house of God. So, and, you know, even today, like my name, Kent, we were talking earlier, means bright in Welsh, and every name has a meaning. Eric means prince with God. There's books you can get at the library, at Barnes & Noble, to tell the meaning of names. So God would sometimes change the names, like
when they come to like a marker in their life. And,
sure.
Yeah.
Abram was changed to Abraham. Abram means mighty father, I think, if I recall. Abraham means father of many nations.
I see. Now, the other question I have is, near-death experiences, do you think the majority of those are true or false?
I didn't understand that one again. The majority of what are true?
Near-death experiences.
I don't know how anybody could possibly answer that. Here's one theory. When a person dies, or when they almost die, there's an oxygen deficiency in the brain, which causes white lights to appear.
Yeah.
But didn't, like, Peter have a near-death experience?
I think he actually died.
Oh, okay. So you think he actually was clinically dead? Yeah, because I always kind of thought a lot of those were kind of, like, weird and funny. Another question I have is...
One more thought on that. You can rub your eyes real hard and get all kinds of lights to appear in your head.
Hmm.
Have you ever done that? You know, you get green lights and red lights.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat little patterns, too. We used to do it in high school whenever we had the boring classes.
Right.
Or somebody can slap you in the back of the head and you get all kinds of lights to appear in your head. You know?
Or you can stand up real fast and get all those little black dots racing around like little gnats or something.
Right. So it may be that some of the near-death experiences are actually, they really did see the light, that's no question. But it was actually, there is a chemical or a physiological reason for it. It does not necessarily, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel. So I don't know how to explain them all, but I think some of them would probably fit in that category.
Yeah, because I think I've heard something like that before.
Okay.
The other question I have is, like, talking about how...
Yeah, hang on to the break. We'll be back right after the break. We'll answer right after the break. Hang on. All right, folks, we'll be back. Check out Dr. Dino.
The instrumental music you hear from time to time on Truth Radio comes from the creations of Jordan Philip Nienagel. To purchase his newly released album in his moment, call toll-free 1-800-748-5549 or visit online at www.nienagel.net. Jordan's unique, inspiring compositions of piano and synthesizer have touched the hearts of many the world over. He has, through his music, presented in one word, excellent, says Jake Brunner of Crimson Light Christian Music Review. So call toll-free today at 1-800-748-5549 or visit nienagel.net. The music of Jordan Philip Nienagel.
Well, John, I want to hand down to you some family heirlooms.
Really? Did you hear that, dear? Grandpa has some gifts for us.
That's nice, dear.
So, what do you have for me?
Well, I have this Bible. It's been in the family since our relatives came over on the Mayflower in the 1600s.
Wow, that's got to be worth a lot. Hon, what do you think we can get for this?
I'll call the appraiser tomorrow.
What else do you have?
I have these wedding bands owned by your great-great-grandparents.
Are they gold?
Oh, no, they're silver. They were way too poor to afford gold.
Oh. Well, what do you think, dear? Garage sale?
Garage sale.
What's this book?
That's the history of our family going back to the 1400s. I've been working on this for the last 47 years.
Well, that's nice. Hon?
Attic.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming over, Grandpa. Come again.
God loved the world so much that he gave his only son, Jesus. What have you done with God's gift? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-523-8669. LifelinePro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this June 5th. Well, yesterday, Jonathan, we had the fireworks display, and we went down in the motorhome that somebody donated to our ministry to see the fireworks, and we passed out probably 2,000 dino dollars.
There are 2,000 lucky kids out there with an official dino dollar.
All right, anyway, we got a caller. I forgot the name. Is it Eric? No,
Daniel.
No. Daniel, go ahead. Daniel, yeah. Go ahead. You were asking questions.
Okay, this is actually really more a point to ponder. Like, you said that ancient man was stronger and, like, you know, a lot of things like that. Obvious point to ponder was how strong was Samson? Because if Samson had the strength of 20 men, we think of that in now terms and we're like, wow, that's pretty big. But if you think about it in ancient terms, that would make him like King Kong almost, wouldn't it?
Well, Samson was after the flood.
Oh, okay.
Quite a while. He was during the time of the Judges, which would have been... Oh, roughly 1300 B.C., which is maybe 1,000 years after the flood.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that we could compare that.
Oh, so you'd be like the strength of 20 modern men as well?
Modern at his time.
I see.
Right.
A lot of the talks that you have, you're talking about how like there's a lot of like a subtle influence of socialism and communism and things like that.
Subtle influence?
Well, I was trying to be polite.
Okay. We don't worry about being polite on this program.
Do you think that the Antichrist government would be like a socialist communist, and the mark of the beast would be like a way to ration like things like food? Because in Revelation it talks about a shortage of food, shortages of water. But yet, with the amount of food that the United States produces, we would probably we could still feed the world if we would all like rationalize it. And it would be like similar to the rationing that was done in the 1920s during World War II, or before World War II, and during. Do you think that's what the mark of the beast is really going to be used for?
I think the Bible says you can't buy or sell without the mark. I think it's mostly commerce, buying or selling anything. Right now, if you went into the store and said, I would like to buy something, but I don't have any cash, I don't have credit cards, I don't have debit cards, and I don't have any checks, they would say, forget it, okay? It is very possible for the store to say, we don't take cash anymore because we're afraid of getting robbed. You have to have credit cards. That way it's all done electronically. And there are places that do that. Many landlords, for instance, will not take cash for their rent. It has to be a credit card, debit card, or check for their own safety.
Well, somebody was just saying that apparently here pretty soon, I think Walmart is going to be putting, they already use, you know, small barcodes and stuff on their products, but they're going to be actually using chips that you can just, I guess, walk through an arcway, and it automatically deduces the sum of all your products there from your checking account.
Radio frequency identification.
Yeah, stuff like that.
RFID. And because the next step is, hey, let's put this in your hand so you don't have to bring your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Also, was the tree of knowledge the knowledge of sin or the knowledge that sin was sin?
It says it calls it the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, I don't know that. I don't claim to understand all that, but yeah. Okay.
Because what? Okay. Also, the thing is, I was reading, for example, in where like Jesus Christ, I think, was talking about communion, or talking about communion, where if you weren't actually really of the body of Christ and you took communion, it was cursed. Do you think that a lot of pastors and priests are really kind of not doing well for their flock, if you will, because kind of like there's a peer pressure to take communion in most of the church services that I've seen?
I would avoid the word communion. I would use the word Lord's Supper, because that's what the Bible calls. There are some people who think it's more of a Catholic term, communion, if I recall, but I don't know the origin of that word. But as far as taking the Lord's Supper, there are some clear commands about, that's a good time to introspect and check your heart, and am I right with God? You know, you don't want to take the Lord, partake of the table of the Lord unworthily. You want to be cleansed by the blood of Christ. And as far as pastors and peer pressure, certainly there's a lot of that. But I think we're going to be shocked at how many pastors and preachers and evangelists and church members and deacons are not even going to heaven. There's going to be enough Baptists in hell to hold a Bible conference. A very large one.
Another question I have is, what would cause craters on the moon, and would the canopy of water interfere with the tides, because one would block a lot of the gravitational pull that the moon has on the waters in the pre-flood conditions?
No, gravity seems to go right through anything, so I don't think a canopy would interfere with gravity at all. I think the tides would be unaffected. Now, what probably happened, though, before the flood came, there weren't big oceans, so the tide wouldn't matter.
I see.
Like in a small lake, there's still a tide, but you know,
nothing huge.
You can't even see it. I mean, it's a few molecules. So in a large lake like Lake Michigan, I mean, I don't know. Let's just pick a number and say Lake Michigan is 80 miles wide, okay, east to west. I don't know that's probably something close to that. I don't know how much tide there is as we turn under the moon, but I'm sure somebody could tell me. Maybe somebody out there knows. What's the tide in Lake Erie or Lake Michigan? It's probably only a quarter of an inch or maybe an inch at the most. You just don't see it. So if there were no oceans, it wouldn't matter. There would be no tide to worry about. Okay?
The next question I have is
Go ahead.
In the times of the Bible, did they talk in the he's and the thou's, like in the 16th century, language as in the King James Version of the Bible?
No, sir. Even in King James time, they didn't talk in King James English. The translators purposely used the thee and the thou, which was not modern vernacular. It's not the way they talked. Nobody walked down the street and said, how art thou today, okay? They did that purposely because the thee and the thou was the only way to distinguish between singular and plural. In English, if I walk into a room and say, you come with me, does that mean one of you or all of you? You know, you simply can't tell. But if you start with a T, it is singular. So Jesus, in John chapter 3, verse number 7,
is a good place to see the incredible importance of the these and the thous. Okay, there are hundreds of places you can see it, but look up John 3:7. Jesus is talking to Nicodemus, and he said, "Marvel not that I said unto thee," which is singular, "ye," which is plural, "must be born again." In other words, I'm telling you that everybody must be born again.
Mm.
Otherwise, he would be saying, "I'm telling you that you must be born again," in which case it wouldn't mean anything to me 2,000 years later. So singular and plural is distinguished by the these and the thous and the yees and all that stuff. And it's important for the accuracy of the text. It is not the way they talked in 1611. It's not the way people talk today. It's Old English. It was Old English then.
Oh.
Right?
The other question I have is, this is a quick yes and no one. Did God make animals colorblind so that they'd be easier to hunt?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a...
We are not arrogant enough to call Truth Radio the home of the truth, because the home of the truth is up there with the Lord in heaven. But www.truthradio.com is a reliable place to find information you won't find elsewhere. Stay tuned.
David Gibbs and his son gained some degree of prominence recently in the Terry Schiavo case, and they're good lawyers. These people are very well-intentioned. They do a lot of good work. They send out a news release, a news letter. I got that letter. In it, David C. Gibbs, Jr. had this to say, and I want to comment on what he said. "Our founders would wince at the idea that the Constitution they wrote is somehow living and thus open to interpretation based on the shifting sands of societal change. Wrong, Attorney Gibbs. Wrong. They would not wince. They knew when they wrote those words that unless they protected those words would change. And that's the problem with our nation today. We need to set those words in concrete and do away with the practice of looking to precedents as some being authoritative."
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. You're welcome to join us on the program by calling 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. I apologize to Daniel. I thought I had a caller calling in at 5, but I do not. There's not one today. If you want to call back and ask more questions, please do, or anybody else can call in.
This is a rebroadcast because apparently that hurricane has prevented Dr. Hovind from communicating by telephone. My guess is their telephone lines are out. We'll hope for a live program from Pensacola tomorrow, so stay with us.
The First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Okay, let me get to some of the instant messages here. Still got a few hanging from last week. If I don't get there, I apologize. We're trying. Okay, Adam Brow writes in, "I have a question about the creation and the fall. Would you say the second law of thermodynamics began at the fall? There are some people who say it's not, that it probably did, but other organizations say that without the second law, the sun could not provide heat for the earth. It would not be possible for Adam and Eve to walk in the Garden of Eden. They would not be able to eat, etc. What is your opinion on this?" You know, Adam, I have to apologize. I have never completely thought it through. I know there is a little bit of argument of when the second law, i.e. decay, came into existence. Number one, I don't know. Number two, I guess I don't care. I guess I never saw it as a real important topic to argue about. So I understand there are some Christians that are arguing, you know, about this for whatever reason. I'm certainly willing to listen, willing to be convinced either way. My mind is open to argument on the subject, if that makes any sense. So I have to say, though, I do not know. And again, it really doesn't matter much to me. There certainly is a second law right now. I mean, things are falling apart. If God made a perfect world, I guess we would assume that that would mean there would be no second law in the original creation if Adam and Eve had not sinned. But then you do have the question of using energy, you know, Adam and Eve just, you know, using muscles and producing heat that is then lost, which is second law, certainly apply there. But
could it be that the whole system is indeed, even that energy was, you know, recycled, and especially if there's a canopy and everything's kept in, I don't know. There's so many things to consider on that topic. I do not have an answer, so I guess it doesn't matter much. Okay, here we go. The Bart Man writes in, if color related to vision is like photography, black and white film can have much finer detail than color film. So animals that don't see color might have a greater focus on objects, which would could explain why a hawk can see so well. Interesting. The Bart Man, I did not know that that's true. I guess nor do I know that it's true now, but I'm assuming you're correct. The black and white film has sharper images. Anybody out there can verify that or deny that? I'd like to hear about it, because that's the first I'd heard of that. I mean, by just common intuition, it would sound right. Which, of course, you always got to be careful not to prove anything's right. I know hawks and owls and some of these animals just have unreal eyesight. You know, they can read the newspaper at the other end of the football field. Yeah, if they could read and, you know, and care what's going on in the world. Okay, don't know. Okay, Fish OC16, right. My friend had a question on how the books of the Bible were chosen. She also wanted to know why there were not any others added. Thank you. This question, Fish, is called the canonicity of the Scriptures. Why these 66 books? Why not 72 like the Catholic Bible has? Which books should be included and why and all that stuff? That is a really long, convoluted discussion you can get into with people who know more about it than I do. In the theology course that I took 30-some years ago, we spent a long time discussing all that. I was, at the time, very satisfied with what I had read and heard and said, wow, this is legitimate and correct. But I don't remember all that. Not something I get into every day. So, I would have to say, again, I don't know. I do care about. But it's not something I keep, you know, in the front of my mind. You might want to check with Jonathan. What's the is it av1611.org?
Yeah. There was is it Sam Gipp? There was one gentleman who apparently he used to write the manuals or summarize manuals for military, like army tanks and stuff. And he gave you a copy of Genesis or something that he summarized, and then he went back and did the whole Bible. Actually, that's completely irrelevant. Someone just wrote a book. I think it was Sam Gipp about the history of the Bible.
Sam Gipp has a couple of excellent books on that topic. We sell one of his books. The Bible. I forget the title of it. We got so many books in our bookstore.
It's the yellow one, I think.
No, it's dark blue. That's right. He has his new one. The yellow one is also really good.
Yeah. I remember colors.
Okay, you're not colorblind. So, also AV Publications, I think Gail Ripplinger touches that in her book, In Awe of Thy Word, which is a pretty incredible book of 1,200 pages.
Really easy to read, too.
Yes.
I mean, that thing, if you just look at size, it looks kind of intimidating, but once you crack that book, it just flows like butter. I mean, it is nice.
Sure. So why those books? Well, I think it's pretty obvious why some of the ones that are in the Catholic Bible should not be in the Bible. They contradict the Bible, number one, in some cases. Or they're just real screwy stuff they teach. They would have false doctrine. I think what they did when the guys got together to decide, okay, which books are in and which books are out, they looked at it. There are several points they would test. You know, number one, did Jesus quote it? Okay, then it's a no-brainer. And that included the Old Testament books, not the Septuagint. But that's another long story. Did a disciple write it, or did a disciple quote it? I don't remember all the details, but there were some steps that they had to determine the answer to that question of how do we know which one should be included, which one should not. Okay, try avpublications.com or 1611 KJV or KJV 1611.
I think it's KJV1611.org.
Yeah, they probably have a book. Now, that's Peter Ruckman. He's a very smart guy, and several of his students work here at our ministry. Good folks, love the Lord, but he's a little rude, crude, and crass, unnecessarily so, and I've told him that. So A lot of the students are actually going out of the country, going to Africa, and
they're there.
And Papua New Guinea, yeah. So if anybody out there likes to pray for missionaries, definitely do that. We've got three of the folks who work here are over there in Africa right now on a one-month test run to see if that's where God wants them to go for the rest of their life. Okay, so I'm avoiding that one because I don't have a good solid answer. I like to know what I'm talking about. And I do know that evolution is dumb and creation is true. Now, that is a no-brainer. Oh, let's see. We were talking earlier about Dan Hicks and his work at the Tulsa Zoo. We threw the phone number and everything out real quick again. If people want to call in and speak with Dr. Hovind or have any creation evolution questions, they can call in 1-877-479-DINO, which is 3466, or they can instant message us right now on AOL Instant Messenger, Dr. Dino Live. There we go. Okay, Dan had worked with the Tulsa Zoo years ago about getting the horse evolution display removed because it was not accurate. Here's one thing, Jonathan, I think a lot of people in Christian circles are missing with the textbook battles and the public, you know, school battles and the public display battles. They're wanting equal time, like, hey, let's put a creation display in the zoo, which is what this article's about, okay? Which is good, okay? I'm not against it at all. But I think they're missing a much bigger picture. The problem is not that evolution is taught in the zoos or in the textbooks. That's not the problem. The problem is that lies are taught. People are just completely confused, too, when we say that we're not trying to get evolution out of the textbooks. I mean, that's the truth. We're not. And you make it so clearly we're trying to get lies out of the textbooks, and that changes the perspective completely. I mean, we're no longer, quote, anti-evolutionists. We're truth seekers. I mean, that's the gist of it.
Right. All right. If you want to call the mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma, this will be good. You can write down this phone number, call the mayor, and say, hey, thanks for voting to put this creation display in the zoo. Encourage him, because I'm sure he's going to get all kinds of heat from these folks who are so, they preach tolerance. You know, we should be tolerant, yeah, until it comes to something against what they believe. They're tolerant of everybody except Christians. You know, if you want to call the mayor and say, they're probably going to get a recording here, the mayor's action line, and leave a message saying, look, I am in favor of this creation display in your zoo. And you might want to encourage them to don't allow displays in the zoo that teach something incorrect, like the horse evolving from the four-toed horse, or dinosaurs living millions of years ago. There's no way you could prove something like that. They can believe that if they want, but anyway, call the zoo, call the mayor, I'm sorry, at 918-596-2100. 918-596-2100 and say, keep up the good work, mayor. Let's see. Dan Hicks has been a friend of mine for years, as I mentioned. He works with Southern Plains Creation Society in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You can call Dan and say, what can I do to help? This article is taken from Answers in Genesis. A good website, answersingenesis.org, up in Kentucky. Okay, collapsed apostle tells a story. Now, what is this one, Jonathan?
That one's by Dr. Tasman Walker, who's a geologist and very nice guy, very brilliant guy. And he's talking about apparently there is a series of stone formations in Australia that are known as the 12 apostles, even though there were originally 9 of them. And then one of those collapsed down and just completely shocked people, because they thought this large rock formation would last a long time, when in fact it came crumbling down within just a few minutes. So here we have this large, you know, geological boo-boo showing up in just a couple of seconds here.
I see, for rapid erosion. Thomas Pope was here. I mean, he may still be out here in the park with his two twin boys that are about a year old. Thomas Pope was, for a long time, the director of Dinosaur Adventureland here. And he left to go back to finish his master's degree and wants to be a chaplain in the Army. But he's stationed at a military base up, he's stationed at a church, he's working at a church up near the military base in Columbus, Georgia, where the giant canyon is. South of Columbus is a town called Lumpkin, L-U-M-P-K-I-N, if you want to check it out. There's a large canyon there. I forgot the name of it. My son and I toured the thing, took a lot of video footage, et cetera. This giant canyon, I mean, it's massive. I mean, it's not Grand Canyon, but it's just a huge area of incredible erosion. The whole thing started
in the early 1800s or mid-1800s. The several stories are around, but some say a Methodist church was built there and didn't have gutters on it, and the rain ran off the corner and started eroding a little ditch, which now is, I'm going to guess, 100 acres of eroded land. It's just huge. That's another example of rapid change in the geology just because of erosion. With Mount St. Helens, man, oh, man. Lloyd Anderson, Jonathan, have you ever seen, does he have a website, Lloyd Anderson? He's up there at Mount St. Helens.
Seven Wonders or something like that.
Seven Wonders, I think, is the name of his website. He does stuff on Mount St. Helens and shows just the unbelievable erosion that happened there very quickly because of Mount St. Helens eruption. So it is not correct that it takes a long time for things to erode like that. Okay, is that a caller, Jonathan? I should take the next one.
It's a caller.
Okay, who we got on the phone?
We've got Kurt from Tucson.
Kurt from Tucson. Drier than Tucson dirt is the expression they use.
Hotter than hell. I get another one. 109 degrees.
That would just change the state motto to just add water.
Yeah.
I would doubt it's hotter than hell, but that's okay. Go ahead, Kurt. How can I help?
Pretty close. I listen to you every so often here. I noticed the call you had last week. It sounded like River, but it used a different name. I think Derek. Is that the same person?
Probably Jared.
Jared, that's it. Is that the same person?
Well, Jared calls all the time. It's not River.
Oh, okay. They sound like the same person anyway.
Well, it may be. I don't know.
Okay. Anyway,
he lies and steals our money. He might as well lie about who he is, too.
Okay. It's not similar, so I was always curious as to what the situation was. Anyway, did you ever get did Hank Hanegraaff ever allow you to maybe go on the show and discuss some of the issues that he had disagreed with you with?
We have written to Hank Hanegraaff. I have called and talked to one of his screeners. Others have called. He has blasted me on his program probably 10 times now.
For the record, Hank Hanegraaff is the famous, quote, Bible answer man who took over for Walt.
Yeah, right.
Took over for someone else, and now he's the Bible answer man.
Right.
Yeah. Walter, who was the guy that died?
Walter Martin.
Walter Martin, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's quite a controversy about the takeover of that ministry. Talk to Walter Martin's daughter about that. You know, she's still upset.
Oh, right. There's a lot of things on the Internet. There was also something here just recently, a couple years ago. He was taking money outside of his normal salary, which is $250,000 a year, plus some expenses. His wife, I think him and his wife's combined salary is $370,000 a year, while everybody else was making like $7 an hour.
He ought to be able to live on that.
He was taking, you know, he had a $66,000 sports car, like that he was taking out of the general fund outside of his salary.
Yeah, I read about that.
That was never afforded by, I don't think, any national media outlets. I think ESPN kind of had to keep it under the radar so it wouldn't hear Christianity anymore because of the Catholic stuff and all that. But I didn't know if you guys knew about that or not, but have you ever tried to call a show? I was curious if you ever tried to call and get on a show.
I was actually a guest on his show years and years ago, probably 12 years ago. That was before he began blasting me. I've never met Hank. I've talked to him that one time on the program. I've tried to call and said, Hank, why are you blasting me for things, number one, that are not true, and number two, without giving me a chance to defend myself? So I don't understand the man. I really don't. I'm not anti-Hank Hanegraaff. I'm for truth and against error, but I don't know.
But you never talked to him personally. He never allowed you an opportunity.
He has never
to defend yourself.
Many people have contacted him saying, "Hey, why don't you let Kent Hovind come on here and defend himself? You blast him all the time."
Well, he blasts a lot of people. I wish he would at least allow people to come on there, since he has the form to do so, and allow them to at least defend their own viewpoint. But
well,
anyway,
if nobody's listening to him, it doesn't matter.
Right.
What he says, you know.
I think that he's making money that irritates me more than anything.
Making a lot of money, actually.
Oh, he's making a lot of money. He's scaring a lot of people, and he's a little arrogant at the same time, which is another issue. But anyway, I was just wondering about that. But
he calls himself the Bible answer man, and yet he believes the earth is billions of years old. He doesn't believe the Bible.
Well, okay, that's another issue, and that's where I would disagree with you on. But
we can fix that. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I remember when I used to believe your viewpoint, I think I listened to you in 99. That's when I started listening to your tapes.
Okay.
And No, you know, I like you a lot, and I appreciate what you do and all everything, and I like the debate and argument about the subject, but I just don't think it's to me it's not that big of a deal anymore, whether it is or it isn't a billion years old or not. And I think the issue with you is what the fact that if we don't take your viewpoint, then we don't know whether or not the Bible is true or not, and we don't know how to interpret it. Is that right?
Well, it's much more important than that. Why do we have death and suffering in the world?
Well, I think, I know what your viewpoint is because man is sin, but it also could be just because God decided to, started by evolutionary processes and that's how it happened. It doesn't make any difference to me whether or not it was by evolution or Adam's sin, because if God knew beforehand anyway, that makes that a mute point, because if he knew beforehand he'd be suffering either way, that makes that argument invalid.
No. To say God created it and wanted it this way is to accuse God of using, you know, death and cruelty as his means. We got a break. Hang up to the break, Kurt. We'll be back in a second, okay?
Would you purposely choose to send a check to the pornography industry? Of course not. If you did, you wouldn't be able to sleep nights. But did you know that unless you use a Christian company, you'll never know if you're supporting the very things you despise? Pick up the phone right now and switch your service to Lifeline Long Distance, a company owned by Christians, and have the peace of mind of knowing where your money goes. When you use Lifeline, you get rates as low as 2.9 cents per minute, and they give 10% of your monthly bill to your favorite ministry. One phone call and it's done. You won't even notice. Lifeline is more than just an affordable long-distance company. They're dedicated to giving away their revenues to Christian ministries to fight the destruction of your children's future. Won't you join them? Don't spend more. Spend wisely. They bless ministries worldwide by giving away over $70 million. Low cost, great service, supporting the kingdom. You've got nothing to lose, including a good night's rest.
Phone 800-311-2418, toll free, and your order will help support truthradio.com.
The resurrection. Now, does it really matter? Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry is building a large creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Ken, at Easter time a few years ago, many liberal theologians proudly announced that they no longer believed in the bodily resurrection of Christ. Why are these things happening today?
Now, Time magazine reported on theologians associated with what's called the Jesus Seminar. They get together to consider theological issues. And using colored marbles, would you believe, they voted on the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And enough of the right colored marbles were collected to declare that Jesus did not rise from the dead. Well, there have been newspaper articles about other theologians who reject the virgin birth and the bodily resurrection of Christ. But why are these scholars so vocal? You know one thing I'll guarantee you'll find common to all of these theologians? They'll not believe in a literal Genesis. They'll have compromised with evolution in some way. You see, if you believe in 6 24-hour days of creation, a global flood, and literal first Adam, you'll have no trouble believing in a literal last Adam, Jesus Christ. His bodily resurrection is central to the message of the gospel. But if evolution's true, and the first Adam's just a myth, then ultimately the last Adam, Jesus Christ, will be also. People who reject the resurrection also reject the book of Genesis.
One of the purposes of our popular website, AnswersRadio.com, is to encourage Christians to reject compromise. Read Ken Ham's free booklets at AnswersRadio.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson. It's July the 5th of 2005, and you're welcome to call in or listen in or write in. That'll take a while to get to us. Or instant messages, AOL instant message, Dr. Dino Live, or call in 850-479-DINO or 877-479-DINO. Either way, go to extension 136 And we have someone calling from Tucson, calling himself Kurt, who is saying there are, I forgot what this discussion was about, John. I've had two interruptions since then.
Go ahead,
Kurt. Take off.
Okay. What?
Oh, death before sin. That was it. Okay.
Left off here where you said, why is there sin in the world? Or why is there death? Right?
Yeah, why is there death in the world?
Well, I don't think it makes any difference to know why, but the fact that there is, and that's all that we need to know about is.
Oh,
that
wait
is.
A minute.
We don't need to know. Why do we know the? Why do we need to know why there is suffering? And
I think every human being on the planet wants to know why things are the way they are. I mean, that's the whole purpose of science. Why do things fall? You know, why do trees grow? Why, you know, why? That's you don't want to stifle that desire to know why. And I mean, I think it's natural. Why is there suffering?
Well, what does your viewpoint have? What advantage does your viewpoint have over an evolutionary one? The fact that man sinned and that's why we have death, or that God created the world and let it evolve through evolutionary processes and let it evolve that way. What difference does it make?
Oh, because they're very different gods. The God that would use death and suffering and cruelty and obviously doesn't know what he wants, that uses evolution, that God's retarded. I'd never pray to a God like that.
What about the God who knows what's going to happen anyway, but then does it anyway? Well, that's even a worse God, because he knows something bad is going to happen, but he permits it anyway.
Well, there were
whether or not there's free will or not, he knew something. If I knew you were going to do something, or somebody was going to molest a child, and I knew that, but I let it happen anyway, that is my fault for letting that happen. Even if that person did have free will, if I let it happen, that was my fault for letting it happen.
Now you're back to knowing, and like we discussed last week, you know, does God foreknow? You know, knowing something ahead of time is not the same as controlling it. And
if he allows it to happen, if he doesn't have to create it.
Well, the bigger picture is, it's not over yet. Judgment hasn't fallen. And when God will settle all accounts and will settle all scores and will fix all injustices. So we're looking at a small picture, a few years or a few hundred years. Or a few thousand years, where God's looking at the big picture, and he said, oh, it'll be fine. Everything will be fine. I'll take care of it.
Okay, well, what about the first people who died, who never accepted Jesus and who never heard of the name of Jesus, who are then going to be sent to hell for something? I think that's probably what you take in your viewpoint, right?
Well, I would look at it very differently. If you had a dreaded disease and were going to die, and I had the cure, and I did not even offer you the cure, and you died. Why did you die? Is it my fault for not offering you the cure? I'd say, no. You died because you had the disease. Okay?
Yeah,
whether I was even around has nothing to do with it.
But the disease is something you were born with or did have no fault in whether or not you acquired it or not. In many cases, that's true.
Sure.
But
there might be a bigger picture there, too. It could be something your parents do. I mean, a mother can take alcohol during pregnancy and have a baby born with problems. Or drugs.
But then if you're suffering the consequences for somebody else's actions, I mean, you spend eternity in hell for that. That's not fair.
Well, you think you're mixing something up here. I mean, if your neighbor drives his car through your house, it's your neighbor's fault. Yes, you're suffering the consequences. I mean, you got hurt or got a messed up house. But that's why we have a legal system to settle this and say, wait, I want justice. You owe me money. And our courts, in theory, are patterned after God's concept of justice and liberty and freedom. So in theory, the American court system would try to settle the score and say, look, you broke this guy's arm, you owe him $20,000. Now,
if the guy had enough money for a good lawyer.
Well, God, though, no lawyer is going to be in, probably not many lawyers going to even be there in heaven. But
all right. Yeah, I understand that.
Okay, but God is going to settle all scores. So yes, it's true injustices happen, just like there are car accidents going on right now as we speak. But they will battle it out in the courts, and in theory, everybody walks away happy, and the guy who committed made the mistake says, hey, I'm sorry, I was wrong, here's my money. And the guy who got hurt says, okay, I accept this, I'll take this money as compensation for damages. So I think you're looking at too small of a picture. When there's injustice now, you're assuming, well, God let it get by. No, nothing's going to get by God. It's not over yet.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it depends on how you look at that, but Do you believe that a theistic evolutionist is saved, or do you think that they're believing in the wrong Jesus or the wrong God?
I really struggle with that. I doubt Hugh Ross is saved. I think he has a head knowledge of Christ.
Hugh Ross?
Hugh Ross, who's
He's not even an evolutionist, and he just holds to a a theory that their world is older than you
believe. Well, see, when somebody says, you know, there is death before sin, and that's the way God designed it, and God required billions of years to create the world, he's not talking about the same God that I am. So, I mean, Osama bin Laden prays to God, but he's not talking about the same God.
He might be talking about the same God, but he's explaining them, or they understand him a little bit differently on a point that's very controversial and hard to understand.
I don't think it's hard to understand or controversial, but, you know, but as far as Osama bin Laden prays to God, he's not talking to the same God I am. Mormons pray to God. When a Mormon says, our Heavenly Father, the average Christian thinks, oh, they're talking to God. No, no, they're talking to Adam. They think Adam from the Garden of Eden is the God of this world, and so the Mormons understand that. They're praying to Adam, and they think someday they get to go be God and have thousands of wives and create their own universe. So, no, they have a very different God, and I am not God by any means, and I don't know who's going to heaven and who's not, okay? But I suspect that people who believe the earth is billions of years old and people who believe there was death before sin, I suspect they have the wrong God and have not trusted the God of the Bible for their salvation. So, I mean, I don't preach people into heaven or hell. I don't ever tell anybody, you're saved. I don't know who is. I just know about me. Okay? I think my wife is, after 32 years next week of being married to her. I'm pretty sure she is. But
this whole thing of the right God and the wrong God and the right Jesus and the wrong Jesus is the very point that causes so many divisions.
I know. If everybody would just agree with me, there would be no division.
Sure.
Or should we all agree with you and there'd be no division?
You wouldn't have a job anymore.
I know it. And I love it.
But then what would you do?
Oh, then I'd raise my grandkids. I'm having a blast with this grandpa stuff. We'd ride
That's
the mopeds. We'd ride the mopeds around Dinosaur Adventure Land.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole other issue right there, too, is, you know, the way I look at things. And everything was all just everybody agreed with everything, and that's one reason I don't know exactly how I believe in the afterlife or not. It seems heaven would seem to be very, very pointless and boring because it's so perfect. Right now, we like to debate and argue and discuss issues, but if there was nothing to discuss anything about, you'd go crazy. So, you know, I think it's, you just try to make the best of what we see the world as. We try to make meaning into our life, and that's how we live our lives.
Maybe you have the wrong perception of what heaven's going to be like. You know, when I ask people say, I don't believe in God, I say, well, describe this God to me that you don't believe in. And when they describe him, I say, well, I wouldn't believe in one like that either.
What do you think heaven is going to be about?
I envision it, I guess, as eternal excitement and learning. You know, I taught school 15 years, and I've seen the lights come on in kids' minds and say, wow, that is so cool. Look at this. Watch, if you mix this together, this blows up, you know. So I really think there's such a huge universe out there that we could spend eternity just learning the marvels of God's creation. So I envision heaven as the ultimate science class.
What will we be learning it for, though? Here we learn things because we try to make things better and we try to understand the world. But if we already understand it in heaven and there's nothing to overcome, no evil to overcome, no science, just learning for the sake of learning seems to be rather pointless, I think.
I don't know. I enjoy learning. I guess if you spent all eternity trying to wrap your understanding around what God has done, it would take all eternity. And the more you learn, the more in awe you become. I mean,
why would we learn it, and what's the point of having the knowledge if we can't use it for anything? Just to have the knowledge in and of itself, what good is that going to do us?
Well,
in a perfect place where we cannot sin anyway.
Well, do you ever like to read books that, I mean, do you like genetics or something?
Do I what?
Do you like genetics?
Or play video games?
I mean, do you like to read educational material that you actually will never even directly apply to your life?
Well, I mean, in an indirect way, such as debating and issues such as this.
Well, you're just talking about it, though. You're not really applying it to your life, though.
Well, I'm not really applying it, but I'm using it to use it for points of discussion on the meaning of life.
See, you like to learn it because
that's what? Because I don't know, I mean, nobody knows for sure the answers. In heaven, we will know the answers.
No, we know the answers right here. That's why we have this program.
Okay.
We get the answers from the source, yeah.
Okay.
Well, possibly it'll take eternity to
to have those of us who are right on everything convince those who did get to heaven but weren't right on everything. We can
if I'm in heaven, I'm not really going to care whether I'm right or wrong.
I don't know.
I'm in heaven, so I don't really care anymore.
I've heard that being said before. A lot of people say, well, if I get there, that's good enough for me. And, you know, you can read about how different, our works will be tried by fire and what type of reward we'll get. And, you know, if all of our works on here on earth are just burned up like stubble, then that's going to be, yeah, you're in heaven, but, wow, that's going to be embarrassing. I didn't do a thing for the Lord.
But how do you think somebody's going to be able to be embarrassed in heaven?
I think, yeah. I mean, once I get there and I...
Because we're not going to have any sorrow in heaven, though. So how will somebody be
respectful? Oh, yeah, you're not going to be sorrowful. I mean, but once you get there, once I get there and I stand before God and I look at my life, I'm going to be embarrassed at a lot of things I did. I'm embarrassed already. I mean, the things that I've done.
Why would you be embarrassed if Jesus paid it all for you?
He still paid it all, but you still know that you've done it. You've got a conscience still.
He says he erases the sins as far as the east or from the west. Why would you be embarrassed about something that he buried in?
Well, it says he's going to wipe away all tears, so apparently we're going to have tears for a little bit, you know.
We're going to have tears in heaven?
He's going to wipe away all tears in heaven, so apparently we're going to...
A
debt paid does not clear a conscience. I mean, if I...
It doesn't, why do it then? If it doesn't clear our conscience, what good is a debt to be paid off?
Okay, suppose you run...
Why good to pay off a debt if we're still going to have bill collectors driving it?
I suppose you run over the neighbor's kid. You kill him. And you say, oh, I'm so sorry, this is an accident, blah, blah, blah. And you pay all the debts, you pay for the funeral, you know, you take him flowers, you apologize. You still got to live with that the rest of your life.
Yeah, it doesn't change what happened. I mean,
right.
You still have a conscience.
But I don't know.
That's a different analogy there because
I'm saved.
Have the family go ahead and let you out.
Well, Kurt, I'm saved. I'm forgiven. I'm going to heaven. But it's my sin that I have done and still do that put Christ on the cross. So if I didn't feel bad for the things that I do, if I didn't feel, then I'd probably have to question my own salvation.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's different because, you know, we all are going to struggle with that.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I'm talking about in heaven, though. When everything is wiped away in heaven, no tears in heaven, no sorrow anymore,
mm-hmm.
You don't... Everything's going to be the same in heaven, whether you make it in by the skin of your teeth or not.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be any sorrow in heaven, according to the Bible. And so, you know, and all the crowns that you're going to get are going to be thrown at Jesus. Anyway,
yep.
For whatever reason that is. And then we're going to, I guess, go learn things for no apparent reason other than the fact
I don't know. And the Bible has said teaches surprisingly little about some of those things, either because we don't know, can't know, or don't need to know, or couldn't understand it. Our brain wouldn't hold it. So it doesn't matter to me. I, you know, my job is to obey the Lord. What he does with me is his problem. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to stick a little more to creation topic. So, any other questions you got there, Kurt?
Well, I can maybe look for a few and call back at another time.
Sure, we'd be glad to take them.
I'd like to maybe get a few of your issues on some of the vestigular.
Vestigular organs.
Yeah.
Do you think there are some?
I've been doing a little bit. I called you about a month or so ago, and we discussed a few things, and we didn't get to go through all of them very, very thoroughly. I remember there was this one. I think what was it now? I can't remember right offhand. It was one of the vestigial organs, and I was going to do a little bit of research on it. Okay, it was the appendix, and we were talking about a little bit about.
Oh, definitely not vestigial.
I got the Scientific American Scientific Dictionary 2005, where they clearly discredit it, and they, you know, very obviously discredit the idea that the appendix is vestigial. Scientific American.
What magazine was this?
I believe it's the Scientific American Scientific Dictionary of 2004-2005.
What they say about it?
They say that it's common misconception that the appendix is vestigial.
Okay.
Or functional.
Even if something has a minor function, like there's probably 10,000 little parts on your car.
Body hair. I mean.
There's all kinds of things on your car that have a minor use. There may be some things on your car that are totally useless as far as the car running. They're just nice creature comfort. So if you just look at a crude analogy like a car designed by man, you say, wow, why does the car have this little emblem on the side? Well, it looks pretty.
But what is your main reason why we have an appendix, other than the fact that I think it's supposed to be good for fighting sort of diseases, right?
Oh, yeah. You have tonsils at the beginning of your gastrointestinal tract to help kill some of the virus or kill some of the bacteria.
And when it, stuff leaves your small intestine and goes to your large intestine, where more absorption takes place, the colon is really a dangerous place in the body as far as if you pierce a hole in the colon and that stuff that's in there escapes into your inner body cavity. It is, I mean, to call any doctor and say, what happens if you're doing surgery on somebody and accidentally pierce the colon? Oh, man, it's just, it can be fatal if it's not watched, you know? So the appendix is part of the immune system for the lower gastrointestinal tract. It's right at the joint where the small and large intestine come together. It's definitely essential for... Now, it's true you can live without your appendix. I've said that many times. You can live without both your legs, too. Doesn't prove you don't need it.
That, that analogy there is a little off.
No, it just shows that the body is so resilient. It's designed with, just like a computer would have a backup feature. Your body has backup features. If you cut a finger off, the other fingers, you can still grip things, but now they have to work harder. So if your appendix is taken out or malfunctions, another part of the immune system is able to kick in.
So, but if you lose your legs, there's no other part of your body that can kick in and you walk again.
Well, you can still get around.
That's just an analogy of that. Can I have a break here?
Yep, we're on break time. All right. You can thank you if you want, or else call back next time. Thanks a lot. We'll be back in a minute, folks.
If you've always wanted to understand a little bit more about law, but not make a deep study of it enough that you would get a degree or be admitted to the bar, but you'd still like to know just a little bit more than you have earlier learned, here's the perfect solution for you. We have received a number of copies of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. This booklet is written by Howard Fisher and Dale Pond. If you'd like a copy, this just under 30 pages will really give you a practical grasp of what the common law is and how it fits into your daily affairs as it relates to courts and jurisprudence. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. No price, just donate to Truth Radio. We'll send it to you. Thanks. Looking forward to hearing from you soon. Listen to this bit of history. I heard him speak it.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Such passion. Such words of meaning, and yet such futility. Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew very well from his law training that when he pledged to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States, that he was pledging to defend and protect a mishmash of changing concepts. Changed like wind blows sand. The Constitution needs to be upheld in its original meaning of its original words. Spread the word.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this July the 5th of 2005. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true, scientifically accurate. God made the world in 6 days, just like he said he did. And the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And if you believe in evolution, we're here to help. The doctor is in. We're not your enemy. We want to help you. So, we take calls here at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136, or you can instant message us, AOL instant message us, Dr. Dino, live. Okay, there's our commercial. Who's on the phone there, Jonathan?
Eric.
Eric, yes, sir, Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, Kent, after the last time I called in, there's a writer who said that I was an idiot and I must have been paid to call in.
A writer?
Someone wrote it. I you know, I'm just going to say I'm not even going to address it, just because I'm the bigger man. Now,
well, you did address it already. You already brought it up, but go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to talk about it.
You're not going to lash back.
I'm not going to lash back.
Well, that is big of you. We appreciate that.
All right. Now, what I called in to talk about is morality, because it's something you've, the first time I called in, that's what you asked of me, is to talk about morality and how, unless like atheists and people without the Bible can have a sense of morality, right?
Probably how they justify it. Where does it come from?
Well, first off, the any type of morality anyone has, you'll see this, you know, with people without the Bible, people who don't even know what the Bible is, you know, there's kind of already a law that really goes along anything that really causes suffering.
So it's kind of like the law of the Lord is written on our heart. Yeah,
well,
where did this law come from? The lion doesn't care about suffering for the zebra. He could care less.
Wait, what?
Well, a lion might eat a zebra while he's still alive. He doesn't mercifully kill him and then eat him. He just, you know, starts eating them.
Well, that's a good example, but you don't see lions eating each other unless, you know, it's the males fighting each other, and that's something different. But
you're wrong there. Lions will kill the cubs of another male. If he wants to mate with the female and she's already got cubs, he'll kill her cubs just so she'll mate with him. So, yeah, they do kill each other. And
look at, I remember when we were younger, when a bird would fall out of the bird's nest or something, my mom would always say, don't touch that bird, the mother will kill it. You know, I guess if you mess with a bird, the mother of that bird is, yeah, kind of just turned off by the offspring, I guess.
So, but, okay, Eric wants to talk about morality, and we still like to know, how do you tell when something's right or wrong? Who decides? You said it's just kind of something that happens.
Let me finish. Morality-based things are based on logic and intellect, pretty much, and pretty much the natural feeling and empathy that people have towards each other, welfare.
Where did that come from?
That's like the subject of altruism, which was what Scientific American was trying to figure out just not too long ago.
Well,
you know, why do we care about each other so much?
A lot of that comes from apathy, or empathy.
Well, that's certainly the reasoning. They're asking, why do we care?
Why do some animals put themselves in danger, like the birds will squawk and fly off to draw attention to themselves, to warn the rest of the jungle, hey, the lion's coming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is called, there's a term for that, Jonathan, when they put themselves...
Being nice, I don't know.
No, they, you know, why would a male cardinal be so brightly colored to purposely draw attention to himself to save the female and the eggs? Man, forget it. Go get another female. I mean, why?
Why do we have a sense of morality? Or
yeah.
How did it come to be?
Both, I guess. Why do we have one? How did it come to be in the evolution scenario?
Well, you know, I think you can just think about this. I mean, people must survive with each other. You know, you don't see a lone caveman just wandering the wilderness. Everyone lives in groups and populations, and you know you'll see this with let's say monkeys. You know they'll have compassion towards each other, and you know the way it developed, I have no clue, but it seems like maybe the more compassionate and empathetic other animals were towards each other, the more they would survive.
Well, that would, I mean, is there a scientific answer though? I mean, you're the one that. If I recall, thinks evolution is part of science.
Well, I guess a summary of there, you just said that's the way it is, and it works pretty good.
Well, people do have a natural tendency to care for each other.
But I know that, and that we agree, but
okay.
Where did that come from? Why do we have it? I mean, you just said that's the way it is, and it works pretty good.
But that's not an answer. It's like the atheist, in one debate, somebody said, where did sexual reproduction come from?
Michael Shermer, yeah.
And, no, this was a...
Well, someone asked Michael Shermer when you were at the Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he said, well, it works pretty good, so...
So, I mean, that's not an answer. No, this professor answered. He said, well, that was a mother may I step. That was Terry Pruitt.
Ah.
He said, that was a giant mother may I step in evolutionary theory. Man, that's not an answer. That's a fairy tale. You know, just so. That's the way it is, so it must work. It must have evolved. Here we are, you know. I want a scientific answer.
You want a scientific answer, Paul. Oh, morality developed. naturally, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll do some research on that, but also what I also want to cover is why the Bible isn't the best way or the best answer for, you know, morality. I mean, I'll agree. Most things in the Bible, you know, thou shalt not kill and cheating and other things like that are right. And, you know, I'll agree with most of them. But, you know, some of them were just perhaps things of
now, the things society. The things you disagree with in the Bible, are those the things you also happen to do?
Well, maybe a couple of them. Let's say it. Just agreeing with the subject of gay marriage, you know, it's spoken out against in the Bible. In fact, you know, you'll see that somewhere in the Old Testament says that
New Testament
should be killed. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that is purely just based on what society thought at that time, and that's why we shouldn't use the Bible to always teach morality.
Well, you don't have to answer this question, but. Are you justifying this, or asking this question, or making this because you are gay, or know somebody who is, and think it's fine, or?
Well, no, I confront an issue.
Okay, because obviously there's no such thing as a gay lifestyle. Okay, it's a gay death style. You figure the average age is like 42 for homosexuals, or something to that effect, as I recall in reading in the literature. They get all kinds of diseases. They're extremely unhappy by their mid 40s or 50s because now what? I mean, I'm 52. I got 4 grandkids I can play with. I have an exciting, wonderful life. 32 years of marriage to the same woman. 3 children that all live right around me, all married, all work in our ministry here. A gay person, you know, he might get the sexual high frequently because of some other male partner who understands better than a female partner might. But after a certain number of years, they burn out. Now, go to a gay bar and look at the 45-year-old sitting around. We're not advertising gay bars, by the way. I'm not saying you should go to one. I'm sorry. Yeah. But it's just a fact of life. It's not. There's a videotape we've got in our library here called "It's Not Gay." It's by a guy who was queer for years and said, "Look, this is terrible. You know, it destroys lives." I'm sorry.
That really doesn't explain why, you know, to be gay is wrong and deserves.
Okay. Well, let's just look at it
from, to be killed. I mean,
well, let's look at it from an evolution perspective. How on earth, how in a billion years could a gay gene evolve? These people don't reproduce. How on earth could such a thing happen? You tell me the evolutionary explanation for homosexuality.
Well, you do see it probably something mutations, but...
Can I ask you a real quick question, Eric?
Yes.
Okay, let's just assume for the sake of this argument, there is a creator and he has complete authority, okay? And he says, Jonathan, Eric, do not engage in homosexual activity. That's the creator of the universe saying this, complete authority. If we just completely disregard, you know, forget if it's right or wrong, if we just completely disregard what he says, then, you know, what do we amount to? If we just blow off what he says, I mean... Isn't death pretty reasonable?
No.
I mean, this is the creator of the universe saying, don't do this. Not a do this if you feel like it. It says, don't do it. I mean, he's completely justified.
Well, maybe to you that's deserving, you know, death. Creator said not to, but, you know.
Not just that. I mean, according to a lot of stuff, it's deserving of death. Wages of sin is death.
Okay, well, that doesn't really prove why homosexuality is wrong, because you know, you can't really say that it's wrong just because it's not natural or you don't agree with it or it might cause a little higher death rate.
I'm not. I mean, it's wrong because...
Well, would you agree that if someone's homosexual all their life, they would produce no offspring? Would you agree with that? I'm assuming you've had biology 101.
Well, I think...
Unless they experimented with...
It's possible. I mean, there's... all kinds of surgery and things these days, but...
without other interventions.
But I guess so.
Okay, so as far as just the good of the species goes, it's not smart. Whether God's here or not, creation evolution aside, for the good of the...
Well, you're going for Nazism, Kent, and that still doesn't say why it's wrong. That's nothing. Just because, you know, it's not good that we didn't reproduce. And that's probably why they put it in there, it's because the gays weren't reproducing and they needed men for armies and things like that.
You think that's why they put it in there? Okay, would you agree that there is a very high death rate and disease rate among homosexuals? If it weren't for the intervention of incredible intervention of medicine, the death rate would be skyrocketing. If it weren't for all the incredible billions of dollars being spent on AIDS research, etc., that this lifestyle is much more likely to bring diseases, sexual diseases, than monogamy.
Well, you know, just, you know, being gay doesn't mean you have to live a certain lifestyle.
No, no. Would you agree, though, that as far as just simply sexually transmitted diseases, being a virgin when you get married and staying faithful to your wife all of your life gives you a much lower probability of getting sexually transmitted diseases of just
every
kind?
Well, if you're going to say that it's a better lifestyle, yes, but that doesn't mean
really
anything is right.
I'm talking from strictly a medical perspective. We had a doctor friend of mine who's now in South Carolina. He said, man, he works in the emergency room, and he said, you ought to see the homosexuals that come in here, you know, with sphincter muscles torn and, bowels hanging out. I mean, I don't want to get too graphic here, but it's not a lifestyle. It's a death style.
I think we're getting away from the point here, Ken.
Well, I think the creator would be smart enough to say, hey, don't do this for all kinds of reasons. Number one, it's not healthy, okay? Number two, it doesn't propagate the race. Number three, it's going to bring a much higher death rate. You're probably going to die of a natural of a disease that you created yourself, and you're going to blame it on me, and I didn't do it. Number four, just like the taking of life is extremely important to every society, murders is important, okay? You don't do that. The giving of life, i.e. having sex and who you'd have it with, is extremely important in God's economy. This is the way God says, one man, one woman, one lifetime, because he's the designer of all this. He has the right to make that decision, and I think it's very wise and very wonderful, and I'm thrilled with what he did. I've seen friends of mine. When I went to my 30th high school reunion a couple years ago, 3 years ago, all of the kids that were bragging in the locker room about all the girls they had were now on their third marriage and paying alimony all over the country. While I was trying to stay clean during my high school years and remain faithful for my future wife, I then can look back and say, man, I have 32 years of wonderful marriage and 3 kids and, you know, 4 grandkids so far. And I can tell you, Eric, I don't know how old you are, but looking back, that was the wise decision to simply obey out of blind faith, obey God. And I still encourage everybody, stay a virgin till you're married, and then stay faithful till you die.
Well, you're getting away from the point, though, I mean.
Well, that homosexuality is precisely that. It is a violation of God's clear commands and of common sense, and a violation of medical common sense, okay?
But intellectually, you can't tell me why it's wrong to be gay. Come on. I mean, maybe, you know, living a certain lifestyle to you is, you know, not healthy, but, you know, it's wrong.
I just gave you several reasons why it's wrong. Hey, call in tomorrow, Eric. We'll take your program. We're out of time today. But if you want to call in about the program, we'll take you tomorrow. Folks, check out the website, Dr. Dino, and come visit Dinosaur Adventureland. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418, that's 800-311-2418, and tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help.
Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1798 on this piece of paper and scotch taped here on the wall above my desk. 1798, after one of his own defeats, Thomas Jefferson wrote, A little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns, and then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are at stake, said Thomas Jefferson.
And that's the voice of Garrison Keillor, prairiehome.org.